Welcome to the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Welcome to the 40th episode of the Golf Podcast. So this week we're going to be covering five things that every golfer should be prepared for on the course. In a minute, we're going to talk about why these are so important. But last week, we talked about, you know, how to maintain and how to find your perfect swing tempo. I know Mike had a lot of success with this, and I have too, so we want to talk about that in a minute. I also want to remind you, stick around. Later in the show, we're going to talk about we got a nice little debate going on the website, and we've had it in social media, and I want everyone to weigh in. But we are talking about, and we've said this before in the past of some of the episodes where we were talking about how golf, you know, in some certain ways, there was like a downturn in the popularity, and everyone's kind of looking for different types of ways to make the sport more popular. And this is a suggested informal rule change that one of our guest authors had mentioned as his suggestion for a way to make golf more fun for high handicappers. And I want to hear what your opinion is. We have our own opinion on it. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Mike, so you've been out there recently. I know you've been playing a lot of rounds. Where we left off, you know, 2 weeks ago, because right before, you know, last week there was no podcast. You were struggling. You were frustrated with the game, but how'd that work out for you?
It worked out very well. I mean, I took some of those tips, especially the ones your father gave us in that round that really angered me back a couple weeks ago. And I took some of those tips to the range and I started working on my tempo. And Frank, it changed everything. I mean, basically, I was trying to time myself through the swing and I was trying to count. And, you know, imagine coming through the ball at a 1-2-3, real quick like that, 1-2-3. And one being, you know, at address, you know, two maybe at the top of the backswing, and then three violently through the ball. I then took that, Frank, I actually added a number. I did 1-2-3-4, and I created that lag. And by doing that, I've had much straighter shots, and the ball has gone much further. I mean, that day we played, I think I shot a 97. It was one of the worst rounds I've ever shot. I was all over the place. And I've shot some, you know, mid to low 80s in the past three rounds just by making that adjustment. 97 to mid to low 80s. That's a huge adjustment. That's how important tempo is. And if I could just really, you know, nail this thing down even more, I really think I could see some high 70s, low 80s scores pretty soon. It was tempo, Frank. That was my problem, and I'm glad I worked on it.
That's what's so amazing about this game. One little thing, you know, one thing you're working on, you're talking about just changing the count that you're using, and you're taking 15 strokes off your game. Because it's so important, we talked about how tempo and timing, how they work hand in hand. And for anyone who missed that episode, I encourage you to go back, check out, go to golfissy.com/episode39, listen to the whole episode. That was one of our longest episodes because it was packed with content. We talked about this stuff, timing and everything. But I'm glad you brought that up because that's something that we didn't even mention. So again, another misconception a lot of people have is, well, if I, quote, slow down my swing, which is not always necessarily slowing it down, it's just more so controlling the tempo. But if I slow down my swing, I'm not going to hit it as far. But there's a really great point you bring up. By slowing down and by adding that little extra count, you actually created more lag and got the distance back. It's not like you were losing distance, right?
Right. Yeah, I got the distance back, and the drives have been much straighter. Remember, I, you know, this was like 8-9 episodes ago. I was really struggling with my driver, and I have been for a while. And the tempo's really cured that. And what it came down to was the range. I mean, I went to the range like three, maybe four times. I was out there for a long time. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was out there for about 45 minutes each range session. And, you know, I go to one of these ranges where the balls are unlimited. So, you know, I could just play and play and practice the tempo from different, you know, yardages, the different greens. And it really helped in that short period of time. So it's not something that, you know, could take months and months. And by the time you get it down, the season's over, you can really cure this thing pretty quickly if you just stay consistent with that count. Try that count. Try adding a number if you're doing it quick and see what it does for your game. I mean, it's worked wonders. And I can't say I was shooting all 80s, you know, Frank. I snuck in a couple 91 and 92s. But, you know, because 15 strokes, you know, every time would be pretty dramatic. But I would take it.
Yeah, but it's still generally a dramatic improvement. And, you know, what you said is right. And what we talked about was the range is the place to practice this, not on the course. Course is where you go out and actually execute it. Practice it on the range first, because that's where you can have more time to commit to it rather than thinking about all the other aspects of your game. But, you know, that's great. Great to hear. I've been working out a lot lately myself too. I was away on vacation last week, which is why we didn't have a podcast episode. I shot another personal best round for myself, knocking on the door again of breaking 80. And this was a challenging course. It's a link style course. There's some areas where, you know, you can really score well there. There's some short par fives and stuff, but, you know, I shot an 81. And, you know, I'm talking about in a minute that I went back and played again a couple of days later and did not play as well. And there's some things that we're going to work in talking about here about being prepared for out on the course that can end up being distractions that, you know, kind of hurt me there too. We'll talk about that in a moment. But the tempo one was one of our better articles. And like we said, tempo and timing, those are the ones to go to. So make sure you go back and check that out. But let's jump right in. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, this week's topic. And this is another article that we recently published on Golficity. I will put the link for that in the show notes. You can get to those by going to golficity.com/episode40. But, you know, on first look at this and some of the stuff we're talking about, just things to have in your bag and being prepared, it may not seem like, you know, that big of a deal. It's like, okay, you guys are going to tell me to have an umbrella with me or whatever it may be. But when you're really taking the game seriously, and again, what we had talked about in the past a number of times about how much we stress the mental game and how difficult it is to maintain your focus through 18 holes, even if the sun is shining and it's beautiful 75 degrees out, it can be tough for a number of reasons. We talked about nerves, we talked about everything else. But here's another thing. You're still, at the end of the day, you're outdoors for 4 hours, you know, a 4-hour round. And there's a lot that can go wrong in that time. And if you're not prepared, it's not just a matter of a nuisance. It's not just getting a little wet because you don't have an umbrella. What it is these type of things that can really take you out of your mental game. For instance, Mike, the round that I played, I was playing down by the beach, down by Atlantic City. And this particular course, just if there's not a lot of wind, it's just where it is near the ocean, there just can be a lot of bugs. It can get really buggy. You and I played there, I think it was 2 years ago, when it was really bad. And it may seem like, all right, whatever, some bugs. But something as simple as just being aware ahead of time. And in this particular course even warns you to wear long pants because it can get so bad out there. But just something as like being prepared, wearing some long pants and bringing some bug spray can be the difference between a miserable 4 hours and a decent round. Because something as simple as chasing these horse flies off you when you're trying to take a swing can just take you right out of your game. I mean, we've talked about this before, all the stuff we do to stay in the game. We talk about our pre-shot routine. We talk about focusing on each shot. And then something as simple as that can just take you right out. I mean, remember that experience we had there, Mike?
That was the most miserable round of golf I've ever played. You know, here's a quick tip. If you're going to a course like that, and you know there's a lot of flies, or it's by a bay or a you know, a beach type course, you know, I would rather sweat. Wouldn't you rather sweat than get eaten? Those things were, you know, all over us, and it was such a bad round. But, you know, that's a tough course. You know, that's a pretty tough course for you to shoot, you know, almost knock on the door of a break in 80. You know, kudos to you. But that was bad, Frank. You know, I wasn't prepared. I know that for sure.
That was rough. So here's what we're going to say. What we're going to suggest in this article are a couple things. Just, you can even just do this one time and not have to worry about it. Just, you know, make a little checklist. You know, everything will be in the article. We'll put in the links in the notes. Just make sure you have this stuff in your bag. Do it ahead of time. Don't worry about it last minute when you're rushing to your car at 6 a.m. to make your tee time and you're trying to remember if you have everything. Put the, you know, what we say is like, put an umbrella in your bag during a sunny day, so to speak, because so it's there. The last thing you want to do is ruin an entire round because you're fighting off one of these types of things. So the first thing, and I'm already bringing it up, but let's talk about it. The first thing to be prepared for is the weather. There's every possible thing that can happen out there. Where we live, you know, we're up here in North Jersey. Mike and I have played in everything from 100 degrees to probably like, I think the coldest we ever played was maybe 32 degrees. There was snow on the ground.
Right.
One of those rounds we played, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's so many different types of things, but there's a couple just set things that everybody should have in the bag. The first thing, the umbrella, like we talked about, I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, Mike, I'll never forget that time when you had like 20 umbrellas in your bag, in your house, because you were doing a client event. And somehow forgot to bring every single one of them, and we're out there in the pouring rain.
Yeah, that's right. No umbrella.
I'll never forget that one, because I show up and you're on. But the thing is, just you were still focused. I'll give you that. You're on the putting green putting like you're not even getting wet. It's just pouring.
That's great.
That was one of my favorites. But anyway, so throw an umbrella in there. Another one. This is an old trick that going way back to my high school golf coach taught me, and this one comes down to everybody pretty much knows you should have a towel on your bag, you know, something, whatever. But the towel that hangs on your bag, chances are if it's raining, it's soaked as well. You know, that's wet. The most that's going to do is help you, you know, wipe off your clubs. But I can't tell you how helpful it can be just to have a couple dry towels on hand if you get hit with a little bit of rain. And I'm not talking about lightning where you're coming off the course. I'm talking about that drizzle out there that just makes it a little bit tough to hold the club. You know, it's making everything wet, but you're not, you know, you're going to play through it. Just, you know, next time you think about it, when you have free time, maybe after you listen to the podcast or whatever it is, grab one of those heavy duty, you know, Ziploc freezer bags and take a couple of small washcloth sized towels and throw them in there. This way, they're in a watertight bag. Even if your golf bag itself gets soaked, you can reach in there and take a dry one out every couple holes, use that to dry your hands and things like that. But the tip that my golf coach taught me, which I thought was really interesting, if you can find a very thin one, so I'm talking about washcloth size, maybe 8 inches by 8 inches, and you know, really just as thin as possible, have a couple of those in your bag. If it's raining and if it's bad enough, what you can actually do is just wrap that around the grip of the club and then, you know, use that almost as a makeshift grip. And, you know, trust me, the difference it'll make will be tremendous. You'll have, you know, all your playing partners will probably be losing their clubs out of their hands because it's wet, and you'll have a nice grip. It'll feel a little bit weird because it will actually widen the grip. But trust me when I say, like, this has saved me a couple times. I'll just, you know, pull one out and then I can continue my round without having to worry about just the whole thing going to waste. Mike, have you ever tried anything like that?
No. So you wrap it around. Wow. That's interesting. I will definitely try that. I never thought of that.
Now, granted, the conditions have to be pretty wet for it to be worth doing. But look, the difference between saying I got to go in because I can't even hold a club versus you can play and you can still whatever, it makes a big difference. And if it's thin enough, you won't feel it that much. So you can do that. It's just a little tip. And I've seen a lot of guys do, especially guys who are used to playing in bad weather. But again, it's one of those things that if you do prep it ahead of time, take a waterproof bag of some sort, seal up some nice towels and throw them in your bag. They're not going to add a lot of weight. Even if you're carrying your bag, they're not going to add a lot of weight, just towels. And you'll, trust me, you'll be patting yourself on the back that you remembered it when it starts drizzling out there and you're not wanting to see your whole round go to waste.
It's just makes me think about the time I lost my 7-iron in the rainstorm because it slipped out of my hand and went into a swampland, and it was a brand new 7-iron. So now I'm just thinking, I'm actually laughing as you're talking, but solid idea.
Yeah. So there you go. A 50-cent towel would have saved your, you know, $100 7-iron.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a great thing. And part of that too comes from me. Like I love to fish. I used to fish a lot more than I do now. And that's something I do all the time in the rain. And I would do the same type of thing. Take a couple, you know, towels, Ziploc bags, throw them in my tackle box. Great thing to have. I'd wrap them right around the grip of the rod, and I would just, you know, be able to so much more comfortable out there. So again, we're not going to go through each one because we have such a lengthy list, but those are a couple that I wanted to hit on in weather. You know, we talked about sunscreen, rain jackets, all this is in the article. We put some links to some great ones that we found very inexpensive that you could check out there as well. Just personally, another thing that I always have in my bag is a very thin rain jacket because again, you never know when you're going to get caught out there. Another one, and this thing, I'm going to talk about it here, but I'm going to tell you right now, I'm the guy who always forgets this. Personally, it's my own mental hurdle. I forget it, but out there, you're going to run into a lot of different types of, you know, different things, pain, ailments that may come up that you're not expecting. And I personally struggle with a really bad back. I've had it forever. It's just kind of what I deal with. And I know a simple Aleve or Advil or something like that can really, you know, just help smooth things out and I can play a lot better. But I'm always the guy who's asking everybody I'm playing with, hey, do you have any Aleve? Do you have any Advil? Because I always forget to throw some in my bag. So something that's definitely not a bad idea, just get, they even sell those small travel ones I see like at CVS and whatever. Just throw, you know, whatever your painkiller, so to speak, of choice is. Hopefully it's not Percocet or something like that. Because then I don't want to be playing with you. But, you know, something like Advil, Aleve, throw that in there because you never know when you're going to go out there, you're going to have a little bit of a stiffness, something like that. And if you've ever experienced that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I've had it before when my back is so stiff, I just can't quite get down to the ball and I end up topping it a lot. That's such a frustrating thing that it can be solved very easily. Mike, actually, you're usually my go-to guy.
Yeah, you know, it all comes down to comfort. You know, when we're out on the course, we got comfortable shoes that are $150, comfortable, breathable mesh, you know, Nike golf shirts. But, you know, a lot of us don't think about this, and I always take two Tylenol. I'm not a Tylenol taker, not normally, or a pain med taker, but I take two before every round, especially on a hot day, and I love having it in the bag. I just pop two in, and I don't get that, you know, that screaming headache I would get from dehydration or just being out in the sun for a long period of time, and it really gets me through my round. I actually stay focused. You know, when you don't have a headache, Frank, you could stay focused. So,
well, that's exactly right. That's what it all comes down to. And that's what I preface by saying. We're not just coming up with a laundry list of things that you should have just so that you're more comfortable out there. The reality is, this is the type of stuff that will take you right out of your game, right out of your focus. If I'm going up to the ball and I'm thinking about how my back is aching, then I'm not thinking about all this other stuff that we talked about. My tempo, my pre-shot routine, my, you know, setting my target, you know, all those types of things, clearing my mind of all the mental distractions, because you've got a huge mental distraction right there in your face. You know, and another one, you know, just jumping right into the next one, talking about thirst, hunger. Look, again, this is easy stuff. It should go without saying, but so many times we're all guilty of it. We rush out there or we think, hey, I'll just rely on getting something at the turn, or there'll be a, you know, a cart out there serving. But how many times you go out there and the snack bar is closed, or the cart never comes around. But anyway, something as simple as just throwing some, you know, a bottle of Gatorade in your bag and a couple of granola bars. I personally do this every time because I've learned my lesson. Mike, we used to have this, I think it was like a year or two ago. Remember when you and I were playing and then your last three holes were always terrible?
Yeah.
Because you were starving, and then you get like the shakes almost because you're like, you have no nourishment. Because you know, look, I'm not even picking on you because I've done the same thing, but it's like a 6:30 tea time. You rush to the tea time, show up with your coffee. So now all you've had is coffee. 4 hours later, it's 10 o'clock. You're on the 17th hole, and you've had nothing but a cup of black coffee today.
Yep, exactly.
And yet you expect to play well. You know, you can't. You know, you just can't. You got to have these things. They're simple. But we even saw it. Look, remember when we were at like the Barclays and stuff like that? You see guys like Ricky Fowler and these other guys right before they'd go out having some sort of like a protein bar or something that gives you that little bit of energy, something that also not just your muscles, but gives your mind a little bit of energy. I like to carry like a banana, something like that out there with me, because how are you going to expect your body and mind to function and focus if it doesn't have fuel, right?
You're absolutely right. And I've learned my lesson the hard way with this. I think I put like three straight snowmans on the last three of the, holes that day because I was just crashing fast. But you know, you're right. You see guys like Tiger, they're always staying locked in focus. He's always chewing on a granola bar, or like a small bottle of water in between holes. And, you know, granted, I'm sure his caddy, you know, stocks it up for him, but still he has it and he does it. And, you know, energy's key out there, you know? You know, it gets us through the round.
And again, how hard is this? Like something like those individually wrapped granola bars, things like that. Those things stay for, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks. They're not something that expires quickly. Personally, what I do is I pick up a box of like six of them. I throw them in my golf bag. And when I get down to the last one, I grab another box and throw them in. Because again, this is one of those things that preparation is all the key here. You may not think of it on your way. You're not going to think, hey, let me stop at 7-Eleven and pick up everything. You know, who knows? You're running late to your tea time or whatever. But when you're there and you're like, oh, I've got something with me, and it just reminded, it just helps you stay focused. Again, I don't want to knock this at all because it seems silly, but it's very important. Another one, you know, and this one we'll kind of just breeze through because we've covered it so extensively, but for all your technology. Now, again, this is if you're not playing like competitive, you're just playing for fun on the weekend and you have like a GPS device, cell phone. We've talked extensively about all the different apps that we recommend for tracking your statistics, which is important, or GPS or whatever it may be. But something as simple as just having, you know, your battery charged before you go out there, you know, your GPS device, make sure that it's got the course preloaded if it's one of those, just so you're not out there just struggling with a stupid phone when you should be thinking about your golf game. And we actually found there's a link to it in the article, which we'll include there. But I hadn't realized this until we were researching this article, but there's even a golf cart phone charger that they make, and you can get it on Amazon. It's pretty cool. It actually has all these different adapters that'll adapt to the on most of these golf carts. They have something you can plug it into, but they're all not universal. So what it is just a plug with a couple different adapters and a USB or whatever on the other end, and you can charge your phone when you're out there. Because I know me personally, I'm using a lot of juice on my iPhone because I'm running either Shotly or I'm running, you know, any one of these golf apps to do all of my, you know, yardage, my shot tracking, my whole nine yards. So that's just an easy thing just to remember, bring that out there and have it with you. And the very last one, this is kind of a funny one because this is another one that I'm definitely guilty of, is just having a little bit of cash when you're out there. Because it's so simple now. We charge everything. You know, I go out there, I charge my round or whatever I may do. And I'm not the type of guy who carries a lot of cash. I don't really carry cash on me, you know, especially not, you know, some small bills and stuff like that. But I've been in the situation so many times. I hate to be that guy. But when people try to play, you know, a friendly round and they're saying, hey, let's play skins, 50 cents a hole. And, you know, we'll play for Sandies, you know, Sandies are 25 cents or whatever it may be, just for some friendly competition at the end of the round. Hopefully you don't owe anybody anything. Then, hey, if you play well enough, you don't ever need to have cash with you. But no, I'm kidding. You don't want to be that guy. But what I'm saying is you go out there and maybe you owe somebody $3 and you don't have anything. You just don't want to be that guy who says, I can't play because I didn't bring any cash. Can you spot me? You know, Mike, you agree with me?
Yes, guilty. You know, it just happened the other day, but I learned that way. You know, now before every round, I do make sure, and because of this, I do make sure I have some cash with me. And especially tipping, Frank, you know, we all are faced with it, especially when we're going to a country club as a guest or somewhere that you've never been. There may be some guys cleaning your clubs and things like that, and I never have cash for that.
That's so true. I'm actually really glad you brought that up. If you go on to Golficity and search tipping, we have an ultimate guide to tipping that we went through. Because you don't, yeah, again, just to throw the guy who cleans the cart $2 or something like that, just so you just don't want to be the guy who's out there and doesn't have anything and you're all apologetic and whatever. But I've had the same situation where it's like, hey, let's, you know, you never know who, sometimes you don't know who you're going to play with, and then you pair it up with a couple guys and they say, hey, let's play a little something for fun. Let's play $1 a hole or something like that. And you're like, guys, I can't play because I don't have anything, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of having cash and friendly wagering, let's do this right here on the podcast. Let's do a friendly wager between the two of us of who can break 80 first, since we're both kind of knocking on the door. What do you say?
Oh, that sounds great to me. But are you going to go play the par 3 course and then call me and say,
yeah, I shot a 48 today. But let's do it. So, you know, we'll keep checking back. But, you know, no, I'm just, you know, joking around. But I think, you know, all these things, believe it or not, that we're talking about, you may just say, oh, these guys are just rambling off a list of things I already know. But they will actually help your game. I believe it. It helped me. You know, you stay more focused. 4.5 hours seems a lot shorter when you're feeling comfortable and everything's kind of going your way that day. And I strongly recommend you take a look at this list and, you know, make sure you have this stuff in your bag because it could shave a couple of strokes. I'm a big believer in it.
Right. And think about it like this. Chances are, if you're the type of person who's listening to the podcast, then you're a lot like us and you're doing a lot of work on your game. We're talking every week about different golf tips. We're talking, you know, about going to the range and the stuff we're working on. And we're dedicated to the game. The last thing you want is to be taken out of that game because it's something stupid, silly. Like, because as we said, talked about, you get to the 16th hole and you could barely hold a club because you're starving and thirsty and you were expecting that there was going to be food out on the course and there's not. You know, how frustrating is that? All that preparation that you did, all that, you know, working on your swing, working on everything else, and then it goes, you know, down the drain because you weren't prepared. So it's important. But Mike, I do like that. We gotta put a friendly wager on that. Maybe want to do that for a six pack.
Sounds good. That's perfect.
Six pack beer of choice.
You got it. We'll see who does it first. Well, you could text a photo of the scorecard, and we'll report it on the podcast when it happens. Hopefully, it happens by next week. You know,
hopefully it does. You know what? The listeners are going to slowly say, you know, I haven't heard about that bet in a few weeks.
Exactly. We're getting a lot more emails.
Chances are these guys haven't done it because I haven't heard anything. So now we got the real pressure on. So now we got to make it happen.
Absolutely.
And Mike, I got to tell you, you got no excuse. You got four rounds coming up.
I do.
You're playing every day through Sunday, right?
Every day through Sunday. Today is Wednesday night. I'm trying to really put all this stuff together because, you know, when the game is hot, I want to continue on. You know, I don't want to fall back into old rhythms and old patterns that, you know, I'm starting to slowly correct. So I want to keep it consistent. And, you know, if you have the time to do it and you're able to do it, then, you know, you should go do it.
That's exactly right. That's how you're going to, and ultimately that's how you're going to improve in this game is playing it.
Right.
Okay. So let's talk about, you know, we mentioned this at the start of the show, this idea of a slight rule change to make it a little bit more fun. And when we talk about this, we're talking about mostly the recent decline in the sport's popularity. And it's largely, when we say that, we mean around high handicappers. Now, personally, my thinking is, and something that we've been dedicated to trying to solve with both this site and with the podcast, is I think there's a lot of frustration around the sport, especially for high handicappers who just say, I just can't get it. And they get frustrated and they quit on the game. And that's just something that we've talked about extensively, and all the reasons why we say that you can learn it. You have to give yourself that time. You have to not be as hard on yourself. I don't want to, you know, drag that out and get back into it all again, because we talked about it so extensively in previous episodes. But just as simple as just cutting yourself a little bit of slack and just having fun with the game where you're at now, just realizing you're going to make slow progress, but it's going to be progress. But there is a certain degree of that where people have said, well, you know, there's different types of things we can do to try to make the game more fun. Now, most of us, pretty much everyone, you know, is in agreement that the gimmicky stuff is really not what's going to work. We talked about those huge 10-inch cups before when we had a couple different people on the show. And that was kind of, I don't know, it's the whole Hack Golf initiative where they're trying, and I get it, it's great. They're trying to get a little bit more, make the sport a little bit more friendly, especially to beginners, and they make it a little bit easier and things like that. I also, you know, recently over the last week when I was away, when I was playing a couple, you know, this one course especially, they had foot golf out there. Mike, have you seen foot golf?
No. I'm nervous to ask what this is. Are they just kicking the golf ball around?
I don't want to pick on it too much because maybe there's somebody out there who enjoys this.
Okay.
But let's put it this way. I'm driving down the fairway and I'm like, what is that? There was a hole. Now, when I say a hole, I could stand in it. It was roughly 2.5 to maybe 2.5 feet deep, big plastic hole, and it was probably two feet in diameter, right? So this huge hole, and I'm like, well, other than that being a hazard that I'm definitely going to fall in or drive the cart into by mistake, like, what is that? But what they actually did is they set up tees, and they're largely doing it right now because of all the hype around the World Cup. But you actually play golf with a soccer ball. So I've seen frolf, I've seen frisbee golf, but now they're out there and you actually just
foot golf.
Kick the ball, and it's just it's a hole in the ground that's a goal, so to speak.
And that's interesting. I'd probably be pretty good at that, I think.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's just one of those things. But personally, that to me is not going to bring popularity to the sport. That might make your course a little bit more revenue because you can, you know, fill more time by selling it to a different demographic, but it's not really going to improve the thing. So what we, in this recent article, and I'll post a link to it, give you the short version. One of our contributors, Sam Adams, who's contributed a lot of great content for Golficity, and I encourage you to go on and check out a couple of his articles. But his suggestion is this. He's saying that, again, informal, we're not talking about in any type of competition, not in tournaments, anything like that. He's talking about when you're just going out there and playing with your buddies, and if you're a higher handicap, what he suggests is allowing only on the fairways, allowing you to tee the ball up. Now, the reason he says this is a couple things. First of all, he said estimates that in the numbers that he came up with is about 90% of high handicappers, 20, 25 handicappers are already playing lift clean in place, you know, winter rules, you know, in their rounds. And we do, we see it a lot, you know, they're not necessarily playing, especially we're, you know, not like tour pros out there. How many times you see, if you're just playing a friendly round, if your ball ends up in a divot out on the fairway, we say, hey, just, you know, move that over. You don't have to hit out of that divot. When in reality, that's the game. You have to hit out of the divot, but we're playing, you know, informally. So he's saying they're already doing that. But what his suggestion is this: if you allow them to tee it up, they're going to get the ball up in the air more. They're going to have more fun. The game is going to move faster for everyone out there. And you're going to have less fairways being essentially chewed up. So it doesn't have to be he's saying not going to wait for someone to officially recognize that. That would never happen. He's just saying this is one of those things that as long as everyone agrees, you know, in the foursome and everyone's playing the same thing, well, then it's fair for all, and so to speak. Now, Mike, tell me, what do you think your take is on that?
Well, I disagree with the friendly, you know, rounds and games on the weekends and things. I just think that kind of, it takes away from it. I mean, if I'm driving home one day and I shot a 67, you know, I was 3 under par because, you know, I hit every par 5 and 2. Now I'm teeing the ball up and it wouldn't feel right to me. I mean, I do agree with it that if you're playing with your, you know, if I'm playing with my wife and I want to keep sanity in the house, I'll let her tee it up wherever she wants to. You know, just to make it easier. But, you know, but you know, no, I don't agree with it. I think the game should be played the same way it's been played all the way through pro level, amateur level. And, you know, that's my take.
You know, and in a lot of ways, I agree. The only area where I say, you know what, okay, I get what they're going for is I don't necessarily believe that doing something like that is going to hinder your ability to learn the game, because I do believe that you can do things kind of slowly. You know, I think if you were, even if you were hitting it off a tee, I think after a while you're going to start to get better and you're going to say, well, I don't need this thing. I'm not going to hit it off the tee anymore. And now you've developed that confidence. So if it builds confidence for you, okay, I'm comfortable with that. But I think what we need to do here is a much bigger thing. I think there's a much bigger aspect at play here. And I think what that is that we need to start promoting a general change in mindset about the game. Again, what I say is going back to being comfortable where you are, understanding that this is a sport you can play for life. We talk about guys in their 80s shooting their age. You know, this is something that you'll never master. You will never master this game. Even the best pros are always looking to do better. We see guys like Tiger going out every once in a while and shooting a terrible round. I think this season he had a 79 the one day. So you'll never ever master this game. And I think that's what the beauty of the game is. The beauty of the game is that you're always learning and trying to get better. So what I think is it's more of a change in mindset. And what I mean by that, I think one of the biggest things that hinder brand new golfers is this whole idea of the score in general, thinking about par. You know, par should mean average and things like that. But in reality, I think the statistic is only maybe anywhere from 1 to 3% of golfers, all golfers, ever really break par. So the reality is it's not like that. There's a lot of simple mind shifts you can do where you can have more fun with the game than just by changing the fundamental way in which it's played. So have fun with it where it is. A great example of this, I don't remember where I picked this one up. This is from one of the mental game books that I read. But one guy said a very simple way to feel a little bit better about your game and have more fun with it is to really and truly and honor and understand your handicap. So let me give you, for instance, let's say you're an 18 handicap golfer. The first thing you should do is go right to your scorecard and add one stroke to every hole for par. Par fours become par fives, par fives become par sixes, so on and so forth. And play like that, because right there, you're playing to your handicap. If you're going to be going out there and you're an 18 handicapper and you're kicking yourself because you didn't make par four on a true par four hole, well, there's something wrong, because you're measuring yourself against a different stick than you should be measured against. You're measuring yourself against essentially a scratch golfer, somebody who should shoot par. So if you go out there and you're playing and you make a 5 on a par 4, you could say, I made my par, you know, versus, you know, let's say you shoot a par. That's a birdie to you. Now, over time, what's going to happen? Your game's going to get better. your handicap's going to come down and you adjust as fit. Maybe you only take 16 strokes that you add to the scorecard and so forth. The idea being as you slowly progress, eventually, you know, in an ideal world, you work yourself down to a scratch golfer and you're actually shooting, you know, real par. But along the way, at least you saw the small, you know, bits of you know, feeling better about the game, and you weren't, you know, challenging yourself against, you know, an impossibility. You're a beginner and you're trying to, you know, play that well, and you're not getting frustrated and giving up the game for that reason. So personally, that's what I think. I think we need to generally need to just, everybody needs to have a little bit a more leeway to themselves, not be as hard on themselves. We talked about this before. We talked about how like baseball players aren't kicking themselves every time they strike out. They know it's part of the game. So you shouldn't kick yourself every time you have a double, triple bogey. Just pick yourself up and move along. And I was actually, Mike, I was thinking about this extensively when I was driving today. I was thinking, you know, about what we were going to talk about on the show, and I was diving into this. And I think one of the big things too, why we see this so much frustration in golf, is because most time when we are, when, you know, you're growing up and you're playing sports and stuff like that, you play mostly team sports. You know, there's things like, you know, track and stuff like that that people do, but even that to a certain extent can be considered a team sport because you're doing it for the whole team. And when you have a team sport, there's a little bit more leeway there. Even if you have a terrible day, let's use the baseball example again. Let's say maybe, you know, you strike out three times in a day, and you know, you make maybe one play out in the field that you can think of, whatever. But overall, your team played well that day, and you know, you guys won. So you won as a, so you think about ultimately you won, you had a little bit of a rough day, but you'll get them the next time or whatever it may be. And your mindset is fine. Difference in golf is when you're out there, you're just yourself. You know, you can't say, well, I didn't play well, but my team did, so I'm happy with it. I'll get them next time. And I think that's part of why there's so much frustration, is people think, well, it all comes down to me. It's all a reflection on just me. And that's where you need to just start to get a little bit more comfortable with it. Give yourself more leeway. Understand, it's a, not only is it an incredibly challenging sport that, as I said, no one ever really masters. It's just the idea of getting better is what's important. And, you know, it's not something that it's like a team sport where other people can kind of make up for it. So again, I may be going off on my soapbox here, but that's largely why, again, when it comes down to why we do this podcast, we enjoy learning the game, not being perfect at the game. We enjoy getting better. I think to me, if you were out there and you played perfectly, that would be boring after a while. What's more fun is that slow progression and getting better. So look, if you wanted to tee it up and you felt a little bit better about it and you could hit the ball and whatever, fine. But what I'm saying is, instead of worrying about that and worrying about changing the way the game is played, just enjoy it for what it is. If you don't play that well and you struggle, have fun learning it and getting a little bit better each time. So that's my take. So what we want to do is want to hear what your take is on this. And like I said, a lot of people have been weighing in on this on social media, on the website and stuff like that, but we've heard all different things. Some people love the idea, some people hate it. It seems very polarized, but there's a lot of different ideas out there. So let us know by posting your comment. You can go to golfacity.com/episode40, and the link to the article itself will be there. It'll explain everything. Post your comment there. Let us know what you think. And if you have your own suggestion, post it there. Maybe you have a suggestion for something else that can be done to make the game a little bit more exciting for, or I should say a little less discouraging for someone who's new to the game. You can also tweet us at Golficity. Let us know what you think. You can use the hashtag TheGolfPodcast, and we'll be following along and we'll answer you. Or if you just want to send us your personal opinion, you know, personally, you can send it to us by going to podcast@golfvisity.com. That's our email address. So send that our way. We want to hear about it. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit on the next show, what we hear back. So that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we've got a great interview coming up, and we've got some more stuff this summer. Be sure to check out golfvisity.com for even more tips. And just, there's so much on there at this point. It's great. It's a great resource for that. So be sure to check that out, and we will check back with you again next week.